The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Triangle Business Journal. Today's stories include Life Sciences Space Race Accelerates and New Townhomes Planned for Glenwood South. California firm unveils RTP project as life sciences interest surges. A California-based contractor fresh off a leadership change in the Triangle has announced plans for a research and development facility and regional headquarters in Research Triangle Park. DPR Construction recently revealed plans for a 100,000-square-foot living laboratory at the Keith Corporation's upcoming Genesis at Research Triangle Park, a 104-acre build-to-suit commercial park. The facility will provide a centralized location for staff as well as a laboratory to develop innovations for prefabrication processes as well as its virtual design, engineering, and architecture workflow, the company says. The construction industry is ripe for progress, and it's been in a stall pattern in a number of ways, said Sean People, DPR's new Raleigh-Durham business unit leader. We're looking at prefabrication in all segments of the life cycle. Ultimately, taking the labor off the site makes the site safer as well. DPR has around 300 people in the Triangle. In 2020, it saw $300 million in revenue in the region. Across the state, DPR employs around 500 and did $450 million in revenue last year. The new facility is expected to open in 2022. The company is the first tenant to announce space at Genesis and Research Triangle Park, located at 3029 East Cornwallis Road on the west side of Highway 147. Charlotte's, the Keith Corporation, unveiled its plans for the park in June, with plans allowing for up to 5 million square feet of commercial space, though the park is not expected to reach that size. I've been here since the 1980s, and in terms of life sciences, I've never seen it this busy in Raleigh, said Bill Baker with the Keith Corporation's Raleigh office. The only obstacle is people that need it built quicker. Next, Briar Chapel Housing Community in Chapel Hill. The total value of real estate sales in Wake County as the Triangle closed out an explosive year in real estate sales in December, according to a report by Triangle real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson. For the month, just 9 transactions had combined sales of $543 million in Wake County. Meanwhile, the median sales price for Wake County real estate came in at $338,000 in December, an $18,000 jump from November, but still below the high of $341,000 seen in August. New townhomes are planned for Glenwood South. Two real estate firms in Raleigh are at it again, pairing up for their latest residential infill development, this time in Glenwood South. White Oak Properties and City Plat want to bring a new townhome community to the downtown Raleigh area, with plans calling for 16 homes. The project is situated at 405 North Boland Street, across from the Gramercy Apartments between Annwood Place and West North Street. White Oak Properties founder Roland Gammon says he hopes the new homes will be on the more affordable end compared to recent townhome developments in the area. He's aiming to start pricing in the $700,000 range. Nearby, on St. Mary Street, the recently completed Cameron Crest townhomes are going for more than $1 million. A lot of the townhomes in that area are well over $1 million. I think there's more demand in this range, Gammon says. It's a great site with a lot happening in Glenwood South. Mixed-use apartment project planned for downtown Durham. A mixed-use project may soon be heading to downtown Durham with plans filed with the city calling for four stories of apartments over ground-level retail. Earlier this month, Elmwood Development filed plans for 318 West Corporation Street, a five-story mixed-use project featuring 82 apartments and over 2,038 square feet of retail. The project is situated on 0.5 acres at 318 West Corporation Street between Rigsby Avenue and Madison near Full Steam Brewery. Retail center, anchored by Harris Teeter, nets $9 million in Wake Forest. A trio of investors has paid $9 million for a Harris Teeter-anchored retail center, Harris Crossing, in Wake Forest. The buyers are LLCs with addresses in Raleigh, Forest Hills, New York, and New York City. The Raleigh LLC is 2 Harris Crossing LLC with an address of 8358-104 Six Forks Road. The LLC was formed January 6 and is registered to Stephen D. Lowry, who has a law practice that deals in real estate transactions. Cree is rebranding as Wolf Speed. Durham-based semiconductor maker Cree is changing its name to something quite familiar. CEO Greg Lau told analysts on an earnings call that the new name Wolfspeed accompanies the firm's transformational journey toward being a pure-play global semiconductor powerhouse. Wolfspeed is the name of Cree's semiconductor unit. The change, Lau said, capitalizes on our 30-year history of working with silicon carbide and speaks to our ambitious plans to compete and win in the rapidly expanding marketplace. With the recent divestiture of its lighting business and the ongoing divestment of the LED unit, expected to close in the third quarter, Cree is becoming a new company, Lau said. The name Wolfspeed will help complete that transition. The name change, he said, will be complete sometime in the next few quarters. No word yet on if the company will change its stock ticker. Next, Novant Health makes move into Wilmington. After a $5 billion investment and more than a year of preparation, Winston-Salem-based Novant Health has kicked off its partnership with New Hanover Regional Medical Center and UNC Health. We're confident that this partnership will allow us to become one of the most advanced health care systems in the Southeast, with exceptional access to remarkable care for all members of our community, Novant President and CEO Carl Armato says. Novant's winning bid to purchase NHRMC, approved by the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners in July, includes a $5 billion commitment, including $1.5 billion to purchase NHRMC and $440 million to New Hanover County to use. The commitment also includes $3.1 billion for capital, which breaks down to $2.5 billion for capital projects and $600 million for routine spending over the next decade. For Novant, one of the biggest benefits of the partnership is its burgeoning relationship with UNC Health. Originally one of the bidders for NHMRC, UNC Health joined forces with Novant after Novant was named one of the finalists for the Wilmington Hospital, along with Atrium Health and Duke Health. Next, Raleigh locale is now sizzling. Raleigh's hottest neighborhood is suddenly one that shoulders the burgeoning developments planned at North Hills and Midtown Exchange. The surge of interest in the North Hills area is now crossing to neighborhoods north of Six Forks that have changed little since rising in the late 1950s and 1960s behind Carroll Middle School. But a major makeover is underway. Realtor Joe Hodge of Hodge and Kittrell Sotheby's International Realty, who grew up in North Hills and has an office on Wake Forest Road, says buyers are grabbing split levels and ranches for rising prices, but prices still lower than inside the Beltline, where a 1,200-square-foot bungalow can sell for $500,000. They're taking these 1970 split levels, these beaver cleaver houses, and they are affordable and they are convenient, he says. They are still 5 minutes from North Hills, Hodge adds. A one-story brick ranch on Westridge Drive that dates to 1965 sold for $438,000 in November. The same house sold for $215,000 in 2004 and $144,500 in 1997. Hodge says the large flat lots that dot neighborhoods such as Farrier Hills and Quail Hollow are appealing for teardowns and new homes. For example, a home at 109 Dartmouth Road sold for $520,000 in October. And Homestead Building Company is building a $2.5 million home there now. The interest will only rise as $2 billion projects, Midtown Exchange, and the North Hills Innovation District rise along St. Albans Drive. And all of that will accelerate the prices of split levels and ranches in quiet neighborhoods such as Farrier Hills, Eastgate, Lakemont, and Hickory Hills. Next, post-pandemic, here's how North Carolina can win big. Open any business publication and you can't avoid the news. New Yorkers moving south. Remote workers flocking to smaller cities, and biggest of all, huge brands such as Oracle and Tesla moving to states like Texas. Put simply, there is a massive shift in investment taking place, and if we keep our foot on the accelerator, states like North Carolina are poised to benefit. To be sure, we had a string of wins in 2020. Centene Corporation picked Charlotte for its regional headquarters and more than 3,000 jobs. Bandwidth is expanding its headquarters in Raleigh with an additional 1,200 new jobs. Eli Lilly and Grail, Inc. selected Durham County with plans to add a total of 860 new jobs. It isn't just the weather. People and businesses alike are leaving higher-cost states looking for places to put down roots, and developers are taking notice. As we look ahead to the post-COVID environment, what does North Carolina have to do to make the most of this opportunity? Keep welcoming new businesses. With globalization, North Carolina has changed dramatically from the textile, manufacturing, and tobacco state of my youth. We have become a more dynamic and diverse business-friendly climate with a higher quality of life. A company like Pendo is a perfect example. a growing business that had no shortage of suitors outside of North Carolina. Why did it choose to remain in downtown Raleigh for its headquarters? Because the depth of the talent pool now available, entrepreneurs are confident that their businesses can scale in an environment more welcoming to a corporate culture that benefits everyone, from employees who put down roots here to vendors with whom they contract. Pay attention to how businesses are decentralizing. As the pandemic has shown, there are advantages to not having 10,000 employees working in a single market. As a result, many companies are beginning to cluster operationally in different silos, be it relocating back office functions to less expensive markets or prioritizing access to the more geographically diverse talent pool with strong universities. We know people want to be here. When lockdowns first began, Charlotte and Raleigh were among the top 20 metro areas New Yorkers were searching for. By highlighting what already makes our cities attractive to visitors and new residents, the next step is for North Carolina to continue attracting the businesses it needs to remain competitive on the national stage. Be a good student of growth. As the economy and cities evolve post-COVID, North Carolina has another opportunity to learn the lessons from other more mature growth markets. We've seen the challenges that growth brings in other markets, how cities from Seattle to Austin have struggled with everything from housing affordability to congestion to maintaining a sense of community. Whether it's rail infrastructure so people who don't want a car don't need one, or affordable housing bonds to provide more housing options, we're right on the track to avoid those mistakes. But as the federal government prepares for another round of economic stimulus, North Carolina has a big opportunity in front of us to make the additional investments we need. Ultimately, our state, which has reinvented itself before, has a big economic development opportunity in front of it to attract businesses, families, and talent by continuing what works and by stepping up our game. We can do so again. Next, Biden agenda faces test as relief bill heads to Senate. President Joe Biden's agenda is facing its most consequential test as Democrats prepare to maneuver his $1.9 trillion stimulus package through the evenly divided Senate, an effort that could strain the fragile alliance between progressives and centrists and the limits of his power in Congress. An early morning House vote to pass the sweeping pandemic aid measure only underscored the depth of partisan division over the proposal, which was opposed by every Republican. But the road ahead in the Senate is far bumpier, with a thicket of arcane rules and a one-vote margin of control threatening to imperil crucial aspects of the plan, as Democrats rush to deliver it to Biden's desk within 2 weeks. Already, Biden's proposal to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2025 as part of the plan has run aground because of budgetary rules for the measure, which Democrats are advancing under a complex process that allows it to pass by simple majority vote, bypassing Republican opposition. In the week ahead, they will also face challenges in the steering other aspects of the bill through procedural obstacles and around political pitfalls, including debates over how much to spend on closing state and local budget shortfalls and how to distribute expanded tax benefits aimed at helping impoverished families. The challenge for Biden will be holding both sides together in the face of unified Republican opposition to secure a bill that White House officials believe will cushion vulnerable Americans through the end of the pandemic and turbo boost the economy as it reopens in full. We have no time to waste, Biden said Saturday at the White House. If we act now decisively, quickly, and boldly, we can finally get ahead of this virus. Progressives are pushing hard for party leaders to change Senate rules to keep the wage increase in the bill, arguing that Democrats must not scale back their ambitions for Biden's first major legislative package. The debate over the minimum wage, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat New York, told reporters, sets the stage for how effective it will be for the rest of the term. But moderates, including Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, want to keep Senate rules, which effectively require 60 votes to advance most major legislation, intact, and are opposed to including such a sharp increase in the minimum wage in the package. Party leaders and White House officials remain confident that Biden has the votes no matter the fate of the wage increase. All but two House Democrats voted for the legislation called the American Rescue Plan, which has broad bipartisan support among voters, but congressional Republicans have unified against it after being effectively frozen out of drafting the bill. The House's partisan vote reflects a deliberately partisan process and a missed opportunity to meet Americans' needs, Senator Mitch McConnell, Representative Kentucky, Republican Kentucky, the minority leader, said in a statement. The measure now moves to the Senate, which is split 50-50, with Vice President Kamala Harris controlling the tie-breaking vote. Biden's early attempt to find common ground with moderate Republican senators on the package yielded little other than general expressions of bipartisan aspiration, with the Republicans proposing a plan amounting to less than one-third of what the president is asking to address the toll of a crisis that has left 10 million Americans out of work. With unemployment benefits set to begin lapsing March 14th for the workers who have been thrown off the job longest in the crisis, Democrats have only 2 weeks to finish the package in the Senate and resend it to the House and Biden's desk. Because party leaders decided to use a fast-track budget process known as reconciliation to swiftly move the legislation and circumvent Republican opposition in the Senate, the bill will need to comply with a series of strict budgetary rules along the way. While the House included the federal minimum wage increase in the version it passed on Saturday, a key Senate official has warned that it violates the reconciliation rules, enabling Republicans to challenge it and jettison it from the package. It is likely that more changes to the bill will be needed to ensure it complies with Senate rules and can draw the support of every Democrat. Senate Democrats are now spending the weekend plotting possible ways to salvage the minimum wage provision, which would gradually increase the minimum wage to $15 by 2025. Progressives in the House warned Friday that they might withhold their votes for the stimulus package if the wage increase were removed. The debate has fueled an already simmering dispute over whether Democrats should try to abolish Senate rules, chiefly those governing filibusters that mandate a 60-vote threshold to move forward, that the minority party has long used to block major legislative initiatives. Here is a look at some of the highlights of the legislation sent to the Senate. More checks. The legislation provides a rebate that amounts to $1,400 for a single taxpayer or $2,800 for a married couple that files jointly, plus $1,400 per dependent. Individuals earning up to $75,000 would get the full amount, as would married couples with incomes up to $150,000. The size of the check would shrink for those making slightly more, with a hard cutoff at $100,000 for individuals and $200,000 for married couples. A bigger tax break for households with kids. Under current law, most taxpayers can reduce their federal income tax bill by up to $2,000 per child. The package moving through the House and sent to the Senate would increase the tax break to $3,000 for every child aged 6 to 17 and $3,600 for every child under the age of 6. The legislation also calls for the payments to be delivered monthly instead of in one lump sum. If the Secretary of the Treasury determines that isn't feasible, then the payments are to be made as frequently as possible. Also, families would get the full credit regardless of how little they make in a year, even just a few hundred dollars, leading to criticism that the changes would serve as a disincentive to work. Add in the $1,400 per individual checks and the other items in the proposal, and the legislation would reduce the number of children living in poverty by more than half, according to an analysis from the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at Columbia University. Aid to states and cities. The legislation would send $350 billion to states and local governments and tribal governments. Aid to schools. The bill calls for $130 billion in additional help to schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. The money would be used to reduce class sizes and to modify classrooms to enhance social distancing. Install ventilation systems and purchase personal protective equipment. The money could also be used to increase the hiring of nurses, counselors, and to provide summer school. Spending for colleges and universities would be boosted by $40 billion, with the money used to defray an institution's pandemic-related expenses and to provide emergency aid to students to cover expenses such as food and housing and computer equipment. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.